Hello and welcome to the podcast of moralapologetics.com. Our aim is to get you thinking about the moral arguments for God's existence. We think these arguments have the unique ability to both illuminate the mind and stir the heart. We're glad you're here, and we hope you enjoy the conversation. Welcome to episode 6 of the podcast. This week we're talking with Dr. David Baggett again, co-author of Good God, along with Jerry Walls. This week we're talking about the Euthyphro Dilemma. And Dr. Baggett is going to give us a concise explanation of what it is and a way to solve the dilemma that is very compelling and very persuasive. And with that, we'll get right to the discussion. Here we go. Okay, can you tell us what the Euthyphro Dilemma is and why it's a problem for Christian ethics?
Yeah, sure. You know, the Euthyphro Dilemma is something that I ran into when I was in college for the first time, and it was a fascinating kind of question. At the time, I thought there was a good answer to it, but I couldn't quite figure out what that was, so I've spent a lot of time thinking about it through the years. So let's just back up for a second and talk about where it came from. In an early Socratic dialogue, which is called Euthyphro, actually, there are two characters in it. There is Socrates and Euthyphro, and they're at the court. Socrates is he was wont to be, you know, kind of in trouble, you know, being taken to court for discouraging belief in the Greek pantheon of gods and all the rest. Euthyphro was there taking someone to court, and these two have a conversation. And Socrates asks Euthyphro what's going on, you know, why he's there at the court. And Euthyphro explains that he is suing his own father. And Socrates is taken aback because, naturally enough, this struck him as rather anathema, you know, to sue your own father. This kind of thing just wasn't done. But Euthyphro was quite sure that what he was doing was the right thing. And he explained what had happened, that his father had punished a servant of his and was waiting to hear back what he should do, you know, and he kind of threw the guy into this ditch and waited, and by the time they got, you know, the news as to how to proceed, the guy had died, you know, because of his exposure to the elements and whatnot. And so Euthyphro thought that his father was guilty of wrongdoing, right? And so he was suing him. So Socrates, you know, he had this way of kind of needling folks with questions, because he would say, well, look, I don't really understand the nature of piety or justice or holiness, but you obviously do if you're confident enough to sue your own father, you know. And so he says, by all means, you know, please explain it to me, Euthyphro. Now, Euthyphro was a religious guy, and he took all of the, you know, lore seriously about the Greek pantheon of gods and such. And so he basically wanted to give kind of a religious conception of things. But at first he said, well, you know, holiness or piety is just doing what I'm doing, you know, punishing a wrongdoer. And Socrates said, no, don't just give me an example. I mean, tell me what its essential nature is. You know, that's the kind of question I'm asking. So Euthyphro says, well, then, sure, no problem. And he gives this religious account and he says, the pious or the holy is what the gods love, and the impious and the unholy is what the gods hate. But at this point, Socrates said, but look, Euthyphro, you claim to believe all of these stories about the gods. You take them all with great seriousness and literally and such, don't you? And Euthyphro affirmed that he did. And Socrates then said, well, then remember, according to these very traditions that you claim to believe in, the gods sometimes disagree, and in fact sometimes disagree adamantly and vociferously, don't they? And Euthyphro admitted this was so. And then Socrates asked him, yeah, but if they had such big disagreements, don't you think that they would disagree about questions like moral questions, right? Not just easily settleable, empirical questions, but those really vexed questions of right and wrong and good and evil. And Euthyphro admitted that this was so. But this entails, then, that the gods don't all love the same things when it comes to what's pious or what's holy, right? Some things might be loved by some gods and hated by other gods. And so this seems to be an intractable objection to Euthyphro's second account of what morality is all about. And at this point, I think Socrates really thought the discussion was over and that Euthyphro's theory was kind of dead in the water. But Euthyphro came back with a third account, and he said, okay, well, look, there are some things on which the gods disagree, it's true, right? Some gods might love X and other gods might hate X, so set those things aside. But there are some things, right, some class of things that all the gods love, and there are some things that all the gods hate. And so let's call the pious or the just or the holy the things that all the gods love, and the impious, the unjust, the unholy, the things that all the gods hate, right? Now, at this point, Socrates then challenges Euthyphro with another question, and this is the famous Euthyphro dilemma. Socrates said, well then, okay, let me ask you this. Do all the gods love something because it is pious, or is it pious because all the gods love it? If something is pious because all the gods love it, right? Well, imagine this then. What if all the gods loved cruelty or hatred or something, you know, like injustice, right? That would potentially make morality seem very, very arbitrary indeed, right? Just kind of up to the whim, the capricious whims of the gods. On the other hand, if the gods love something because it is pious, that makes it seem as if some things are pious in and of themselves, and that's why the gods love those things, in which case the essential nature of piety hasn't really been identified. We've simply identified two coextensive classes, right? Things that all the gods love, the things that are pious. But the things that are all pious aren't pious in virtue of the gods loving them, rather quite vice versa. The gods love them because they are pious, but then that leaves unanswered the question, what's the essential nature of piety or holiness? So, expressed in contemporary and monotheistic terms, the Euthyphro dilemma then would go something like this. This is at least usually the way it goes. All right, we're going to shift now from polytheism to monotheism. We're going to talk about the commands of God rather than, say, the loves of God. And we'd ask a question like this. Is something moral because God commands it, or does God command it because it's moral? One more time. Is something moral because God commands it, or does God command it because it is moral? Anthony Flew once said, a good test of philosophical aptitude is your ability to understand the Euthyphro dilemma. Right, so here we are. All right, so the contemporary version of the Euthyphro dilemma, right, when you put it in monotheistic terms and you talk about the commands of God rather than the loves of the gods, sounds like this. Does God command something because it is moral, or is something moral because God commands it? And neither option seems particularly palatable to the classical theist. Both horns seem problematic in certain respects. If you say God commands something because it is moral, this isn't very palatable to the classical theist because it makes it seem as if morality is autonomous from God, right? But if you say something is moral because God commands it, now you have something like divine command theory, right? Something is moral because God commands it, right? But the main objection to that is an arbitrariness sort of concern, right? Well, what if God commanded us to torture children for fun? Would that become the moral thing to do? See, this seems to be one of those unpalatable implications of divine command theory. And this is the other horn of the dilemma. So either way you go, you got a problem, right? Morality seems either autonomous, independent of God, which makes classical theists very nervous.
Because you could just say, well, why do we need God then to know?
Right.
Right.
Right. At most, God just fulfills a sort of epistemic function of cluing us in as to its contents, but he's not its ontological source or metaphysical foundation. Right. But if you say God, something is moral because God commands it, that makes it seem like morality is altogether arbitrary. And again, you know, just a function of divine whim.
So that God could have commanded that torturing babies for fun, he could have commanded us to do that, and that would be good.
That would be good, if or right, depending on, you know, what version of the divine command theory you're embracing, right? But yeah, that's the idea.
Okay. So how do we solve this dilemma? Is it solvable even?
I think so. Let's begin with that distinction between the good and the right.
Okay.
Okay. To talk about the good is to talk about moral value. All right. So if something is morally good, it has value, it has worth, something like that. So if you speak in terms of an action being good, right, the action is a valuable action. It's a good action to perform, something like that. But not everything that is good to do is something obligatory to do, right?
Right.
And so this notion of obligatoriness is more commonly connected with what's called, deontic morality, which is a cluster of concepts pertaining to that which is forbidden, that which is permissible, that which is obligatory, that kind of thing, right? So let's key in on this deontic notion of obligatoriness, right? To have an obligation, to have a moral duty, this is the idea of, well, this is something that we really ought to do, right? So it's not just good, right, to do. It's something that we really ought to do. And again, these don't perfectly overlap. If I went to the soup kitchen 5 days a week and helped out, that would be a good thing to do potentially, but it's not necessarily an obligatory thing to do. Most of us would say it goes above and beyond the call of duty, right?
Right.
Yeah, that sort of deal. So the question is, okay, suppose you want to embrace the horn of the Euthyphro dilemma that says something is moral because God commands it. Well, you could be saying something is good because God commands it, or you could be saying something is obligatory because God commands it. As far as I'm concerned, I think we should say, if you're inclined to embrace something like a divine command theory, which is one among other theories of theistic ethics, I think we should say something is obligatory because God commands it, right?
So in other words, something is right because God commands
it. Yeah. Right in the sense of obligatory, okay. Right? So, yeah, I embrace a divine command theory of moral rightness. Not of moral goodness, but of moral rightness, of moral obligatoriness. And in this way, I'm like C. Stephen Evans and, Robert Adams and others. But I think that's the way to go. This was the suggestion that Bill Alston years ago offered to theistic ethicists and divine command theorists, that they delimit their approach just to issues of moral obligation. With respect to the good, if you want to root moral goodness in God, I think there's a way to do that without rooting it in God's commands. I'm inclined to think that the better way to go there is to think in terms of, well, God himself, in some sense, is the ultimate good, or God's nature, God's character, something like that. And with respect to human beings, we have been made in God's image, right, and with a particular nature. And so there are certain things that are good for us, that are deeply connected with the way God made us, and the way God made us with a particular nature, and with and in the image of God himself. And God himself has his own, you know, nature. So based upon God's nature and our nature, you might say certain things are good for us, but they're also good in and of themselves, right? I mean, what is good for us usually, you know, and most ultimately, is what is good in and of itself. And so it seems to me that with respect to the good, we ought to, in a sense, embrace both a Platonic and an Aristotelian approach and talk about the good in both senses, right? What is the ultimate ontological good? Well, God himself, right? And then in some lesser sense, you know, what is good? Well, things are good relevantly resemble God's nature, or what is good for us is what is good in and of itself, or what is good for us is what is in accord with our God-given nature, right? So we can speak in terms of, you know, the intrinsic good, but we can also speak in terms of, you know, these lesser finite goods, or goods in virtue of which we find our lives to flourish.
So let's just go back for 1 second to the dilemma about So one of the options is the Platonic option, that you affirm that goodness is this thing existing external to God. And you're suggesting that we identify God as the good?
Yeah, I think that the ultimate good is God Himself. When you think about what Plato has to say about the true and the good and the beautiful, right? And you look at the kinds of features that he identifies there as the ultimate true and the ultimate good and beautiful. I think it's natural for, say, a Christian theist to think in terms of God Himself, that these things are very much a reflection of who God is, what God represents, right? God is the ultimate archetype of these things, the ultimate embodiment of these things. You know, God Himself is true and good and beautiful. And I mean this more than just sort of the is of predication. I mean, there's something like an is of identity here, right? Mm. God Himself is the ultimate locus of value. God Himself is the good. Yeah, I'm very much drawn to that kind of thing. It makes a lot of sense to me, you know, and then things that we find in this world that are good are, say, this is the way Robert Adams might put it, you know, good in virtue of relevant resemblance to some aspect of God, you know, that kind of thing. I like that kind of idea. But in this connection, let me just say that with respect to the Euthyphro dilemma, mm-hmm. what I would say is, something is obligatory because God commands it. So I would embrace what you might call the voluntarist horn of the Euthyphro dilemma with respect to the right.
Right.
But I embrace the non-voluntarist horn with respect to the good. Generally, I think God commands something because it is good. You know? Right. And then good, you know, in virtue of relevant resemblance to Him,
yeah, so this
or
is
in
not
conformity
a good
with
external
nature.
To God. It's yeah. God as the good.
That's right. It's a thoroughgoing theistic approach, okay, where both the good and the right are rooted in God, but different aspects of God, His nature, character with respect to the good, His commands with respect to moral obligation. So that's my solution to the Euthyphro dilemma. It's not entirely original to me. I mean, numerous people have taken attacks similar, but I think that you need to sort of divide the horns of the dilemma and take one approach with respect to the good and another approach with respect to the right.
Okay, well, thank you for joining us this week on the podcast of moralapologetics.com. Please check out our website when you get a chance. We're working on developing it into a resource for all your needs on the moral argument. Hope you enjoyed the conversation, and we'll see you next week.